chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees. Chicken in the pots, the martyr walked the Petaloomies. Out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming here in Sonoma County, the North Bay, and beyond. It's Michelle Anna Jordan, live in the studio, or fairly live, I guess. A little tired this weekend. Hope you've had a good weekend. Beautiful day today, and if you like it, a little overcast and cool and drizzly. It's also a really beautiful day yesterday. And before I welcome our guest, just want to talk about a couple of things. Yesterday, I went to a really rare open house event at Baker Lane Vineyards, Steven Singer's winery. The winery itself is not based there. That's not where they make the wine. It's Steven Singer's home. It's his home and his family's home. And it's surrounded by just really spectacular Pinot Noir and Syrah grapes. And the overcast just made it so perfect because you could be outside, you know, 1 in the afternoon and not think about sunscreen, not get too hot, enjoy the food. And I've known Steven's wines ever since he began making them a number of years ago. But one thing I hadn't realized is that he purposefully keeps them low alcohol. That's what he prefers. I think that's people with good palates who are paying attention and not just trying to go for the ratings that some of the critics bestow on really big, high alcohol wines. I think a lot of people do prefer that, and I certainly do. Lower alcohol wines are much more food friendly than higher alcohol wines, and you can drink more. So from a winemaker's point of view, you're going to sell more wine because people will drink more when you don't have those massive 14 to 16% wines. So there were a lot of members of Baker Lane Vineyards Wine Club there. There were several new releases, and the 2014, I think it was the 2014 Rosé, is an absolute beauty. It's completely dry, beautifully acidic, and under 12%. Alcohol. I just wanted to get down on the floor and kiss Steven's feet for doing that. It was all the subtle characteristics of the wine showed through with the alcohol under control, and you could drink without, you know, you could taste, you know, taste a bit without thinking that, oh my God, I'm going to get drunk at 1 in the afternoon because it's so high alcohol. So bravo to Steven Singer and his winemaker Greg for that. And I hope to get them onto Mouthful sometime really soon. One other thing about the party, they had it catered by a Mexican restaurant in San Francisco, Cala, C-A-L-A. It's, I forget exactly what street, but I know it's between, I think, Fell and Franklin. And it was just absolutely beautiful, rustic Mexican food. There was something resembling chili verde, but not quite. It was pork, salsa verde, and chard. Really lovely. There was a little... very little tostada. If you make a circle with your pointer finger and thumb, that's about how big the tortilla was. Fried crisp and then topped with a very simple guacamole, Dungeness crab, and a single tip of asparagus. That was outstanding. But probably the most interesting of everything were these enormous orange sweet potatoes that were thrown onto the fire and baked until they were very, very tender. The outsides were completely charred. And they were served with what they were calling it a black salsa. So there were pureed chile negro, but it was all softened by bone marrow. And oh my, it was just so very, very good. Really delicious. And went beautifully with the wines. The other wines that Baker Lane Vineyards makes, they do Viognier, then the Rosé, two or three different Pinot Noirs, and two or three different Syrahs, all in the softer style, no heavy oak and no high alcohol, and that food, the Mexican food with it, was just really very beautiful. Today, of course, was the Sebastopol Farmers Market, where I always end up spending 2 or 3 hours every Sunday morning. It was a really crowded market today. I think there were a lot of tourists in town because, you know, I see the same people over and over because I've been going since it started. But this was different, so I think there were lots of tourists. And there are going to be some changes coming up. Today was the last day for Owen Family Farm, which they produce fabulous meats in, I believe, Potter Valley. Pretty sure it's Potter Valley. And they work so hard. Ed and Deb, pretty sure it's Deb. Ed and Deb have full-time, they work really hard during the week. And then they have beautifully raised goat, pork, lamb, a lot of, they have bone broth. They have, they process some of their meats into bacon and salami. And they make really outstanding raw pet food. They're just going to regroup a little bit in the next year because they are working so hard. So if you are, if you're, excuse me, used to shopping with Owen Family Farm, you'll find them at the Hillsburg Farmers Market on Saturdays, the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market up there in, I think for a little bit longer, it's going to be called the Wells Fargo Center. And then a market that vendors and farmers really love in Cloverdale on Tuesday afternoons. I think it's from 3 to 6. So they'll be there, and then they'll be back in Sebastopol, they say, in a year. So that's one of the things happening. Another thing, if you are a gardener and you like to plant lavender, Terra Savia, which is both a winery and an olive oil a production facility, and they make their several varieties of their own olive oil. They're selling white lavender. White lavender is so beautiful and really pretty hard to find. So they have it right there. I think they're $10. They're in gallon pots. And I've my white lavender died, gosh, several years ago when there was a lot of rain. So I'm going to pick up some from them. And then finally, and we'll be talking about this in detail on Mouthful in a few weeks, there is a woman in Grayton, and she has a cow. She has one cow, and she has been doing a lot of research nationwide about how you can legally let people buy raw milk. It's very controversial. It's, you can end up in jail. I mean, sort of a lot of out of control attacks on raw milk. And the way that you do it is through a cow share. So you sell your cow share. Somebody can buy one cow share, two cow, whatever, and then you pay that share, and then you get whatever that one share allotment is. So, for example, maybe one share costs $45, entitles you to buy, to have, or to buy 1 half gallon of milk a week from your own cow. And that is the legal way to do it. And that's going to be starting either next week or the week after. And once she gets her sea legs, so to speak, on how it's going to work, we'll, we will have her here on Mouthful. Belle is a Jersey cow. Jerseys produce what I think is the most delicious cow's milk you could ever taste. So I'm very excited that she has, she's been talking about this for a while and doing lots of research, and I'm really glad that we're very close to having that available to us. So, on that note, another change at the Sebastopol Farmers Market is that Handlebar Farm is out there. They've been at West End Farmers Market for quite some time, and they've now, there's room for them to get into the Sebastopol Farmers Market. Sebastopol Farmers Market is closer to the farm, which is on the south side of Sebastopol between Sebastopol and Cotati. And I don't know what I did, but I managed to wrangle Ian Healy of the farm to come onto Mouthful, and we need to bring his microphone up. Welcome, and thank you.
Here you go.
Yeah. Cool. Okay, welcome, Ian.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
Oh, you bet. Thank you for saying yes. And it's so exciting. You have brought something. Tell us what you brought here. This is really great.
Oh. Well, they're small.
That's okay.
The first tomatoes of the season I brought to the Sebastopol market today.
They were gone by the time I got there pretty early, and I didn't see them.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I think the market officially opens at
10,
and I think I
people
sold
get
all
there
of them
at 9.
I think I sold them out by 8:45.
People just go to that market earlier and earlier and earlier.
No, it's like I pull the truck up and people are already there.
Uh-huh. But is that okay with you, or does it bother you in getting set up?
You know, I don't have a problem, because it's usually only a couple folks that are there that early, and it's hard to say no if someone's handing you money.
Sure, exactly. And I know that Paula Downing, who managed that market for a long time, she's the one who adopted that policy. Mm-hmm. Some markets, say Healdsburg, you can look, but you can't spend money until the cowbell. And the cowbell is right at 9 o'clock. And I wondered, when Paula began managing the Sebastopol market, why she didn't do that. And Paula, being the absolutely brilliant person that she is, who I think has the deepest understanding of farmers of anyone I've ever seen, she said she would never think to deny a farmer a sale. Yeah. So if people want to come early and buy, she's not going to stop that.
Yeah. I appreciate that freedom. And that seems very surpassable to me anyways.
It does, yeah, very much. But I was there at 10:15, and one of the things I really wanted was carrots from Laguna Farm.
Uh-huh.
They were already gone.
Yeah. Yep.
So
it happens.
Yeah, it does. So you've been there just now a few weeks, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think if this was our fifth market, something in that range.
Uh-huh. And how's it going?
It's very good.
Yeah, it looks like you just sell out every week.
Yeah, generally. Yeah, and it's the farm that we operate is just small. It's my wife and I. So we try to bring the appropriate amount for market so that we're not bringing excess and going home with a lot. And it's been a real eye-opener for me of trying to think. We put in our application to get in 4 years ago, and we've been this is our fourth season of operating the farm, and there's been so many people in our neighborhood who have seen our sign out there on the road, but didn't know where we sold, or because we don't have a farm stand, it's a really quiet road, and it's been wonderful to meet just maybe dozens of neighbors on our Schaefer Road and the surrounding areas, and to connect with them now at our farmer's market that's 6 minutes away from our farm.
Now, are you within what's called the Petaluma Gap?
We are not, I don't think, because we watch it.
So you can see the farm, but it doesn't blanket you.
Yeah, during the summertime, as we look to our south, we have a big open gap to our south, and we can see there's a huge olive oil estate down to our south, and I'm not exactly sure. They don't have signs out, so I don't know their name. But beyond them, it's like the next hill, we'll watch the channel of fog come in most days. And usually it doesn't reach us. Uh-huh. We'll just watch that channel as it goes in. But what we still get the cooler breezes
you do. Okay.
In the afternoons. Yeah. Even today after the market, just going from Sebastopol to Schaefer Road, 6 minutes south. Mm-hmm. You know, it feels 5 degrees cooler, six mm-hmm. degrees cooler down there.
Yeah. Well, the reason I add that in the short run, the reason I ask is that you have artichokes.
Yeah.
And artichokes need that cool breeze.
Mm-hmm.
So what variety are you growing?
Oh, this is our first year growing them. So we planted them last fall. It's called Imperial Star. Mm-hmm. It was bred for annual production. So we started them from seed. And yeah, they've just been growing really. We planted them last fall. They established over the winter, and they started producing the bulbs this spring.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you have a sense of what their season will be? About how much longer you'll have them?
The plants are slowing down now. I would think maybe a couple weeks on them. Yeah, they're already slowing down quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And then, like I said, our first year growing them, so I'm learning as we go. And they should take a break for the summer months.
And then have them in the fall again?
Yeah, then hopefully give us another round through the fall.
Well, I'm going to get some next week.
Okay. They're a cool crop. It's just so different to go down the row and you're harvesting immature flowers, you know, that can weigh up to like half a pound or even a pound a piece.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, they're interesting, that's for sure.
They're one of my favorite foods.
Yeah.
I've been eating them since I can remember. Like, remember them for the first time when I was 3 years old because I grew up in California.
Okay.
And that was really the one fresh vegetable that my mother fed us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most everything, asparagus and everything else was in a can and awful. But boy, when she got those fresh artichokes, I was so happy.
And my wife and I, we started, a lot of times I'll come home from the market with a bunch of the smaller ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started cutting them in half and roasting them in the oven,
mm-hmm.
and that's now our favorite way to eat them. Like the steaming to me just doesn't compare now.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good that way, especially the smaller ones.
Oh yeah, those little ones. I like the big ones, mm-hmm. and I either steam them or boil them,
mm-hmm.
and I do that because I really like. I use the heart.
Mm-hmm.
When I can like make myself not eat it immediately. I use the heart to make an artichoke and green olive tapenade. And it's not smooth tapenade, it's chopped. And it has walnuts and green olives and green peppercorns and garlic, lemon. And it's just so good with the bigger artichokes.
Mm-hmm.
But I love it. I don't care what they are.
Yeah, I don't get to eat the bigger ones. I get the leftovers.
Now, I want to go back to interesting story. You and your wife, you both grew up in the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
but you met in Alaska, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I want you to tell us that story.
So I grew up in Illinois. She grew up in Ohio. And I was working for the Park Service at Denali National Park
mm-hmm.
in Alaska. And I was there for the winter. And it's incredibly lonely through the winter time up there, and incredibly dark.
Dark and cold.
I got the training schedule for the upcoming season, and I saw that there were two girls coming to our park for the training, and so I manipulated the schedule so that I was always paired up with Emily.
But you hadn't met her before.
I hadn't met her yet. I don't know. It was either Emily or Jory, and I just picked Emily.
Uh-huh.
So it worked out for the best, because I ended up marrying her.
Yeah, that's a great story.
So,
after you two met, how long did you stay in Alaska?
We met in April. We left that fall, so like October, the following season. I just couldn't do another winter up there.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit too dark through the winter time.
I've always wanted to spend one winter in Alaska mm-hmm. and not in Anchorage, but out somewhere really remote, just to see what it would be like.
Yeah, I do recommend, if only just for a little while. You
mm-hmm.
can, traveling up there through the winter, it's funny to say go to Alaska in the wintertime, mm-hmm. but it's like everything is less than half price.
Mm-hmm.
You can rent a car for $5 a day.
Really?
It was absolutely ridiculous, because they have tons of cars in Anchorage to
uh-huh.
rent, but no one rents them in the wintertime.
And
to have people come up to the park. The park mm-hmm. was open every day of the year except for
mm-hmm.
Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and there's dog mushing tours and
mm-hmm.
all sorts, and plus nonstop northern lights through the wintertime.
I've made two trips to Alaska in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
I went because there was a sale on tickets, and it gave me just enough miles that I could keep my executive status on United. And that was when I was doing a lot of traveling. So I flew up on United, flew to Alaska on Friday nights and returned on Sunday nights. So I went up, and I packed so much into those 2 days and absolutely fell in love. And then later, with some friends, we went to Fairbanks. And it was an 11 year, so the Northern Lights were at their peak. And we stayed up all night, every night, yeah, watching the Northern Lights from Mount Aurora, which is outside of Fairbanks.
Okay.
And it's up. You know, a lot of people, if you read stories in like Time Magazine and that, they tell you to go to Chena Hot Springs.
Yep.
But Chena Hot Springs is in a valley. And they have white lights at night.
Right.
And if you want to go up to the ridge, they take trips up to the ridge. You have to pay like $30 or $40 a person. And they come back at midnight. But sometimes the lights don't come out until 1 or 2 in the morning. And Mount Aurora is already on the ridge. And you just stay and you bundle up. And as long as you can stay awake, you can see the lights. So it's anyone who wants to do that, I recommend that as one of the best possible trips you could ever take.
Yeah. When I was a park ranger up there, one of the funniest questions I ever got was, what time do the Northern Lights come on?
Like you have to go,
yeah,
flip the switch.
I didn't know. I'll let you know when we get the switch working again. But,
yeah. Yeah. And the Northern, really, I think the Northern Lights and flowing lava are two of the most gorgeous natural phenomenons on Earth. I love both so much. Okay, anyway, so you left in the fall, and did you come directly to Sonoma County?
No, we moved down to Washington State for 4 years, and
okay,
after 4 years, it was like Alaska was too dark, and then Washington was too dreary. We were in Bellingham, near the Canadian border, and
uh-huh,
it was really dreary after a while, and so I started looking for teaching jobs in the Bay Area and Hawaii, and I just, Emily, I said, we need more sun in our lives, and so I got offered a teaching job at Redwood High School in Larkspur.
Oh, yeah.
So we moved down to San Rafael, and I taught for a year there.
What were you teaching?
High school science.
Okay.
And, it was a great district and great teachers, great students.
I actually worked there for a while.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, when I was I was just out of graduate school, maybe. Mm-hmm. Still in graduate school. I was a TA in the English department.
Cool.
So graded a lot of essays and did lots of in-class tutoring.
Yeah, plenty of grading. So
yes,
it wasn't the job for me, I found out. So then we decided to naively start a farm.
Naively?
Yeah.
And 4 years into it, how are you feeling about it?
Like we're finally understanding after 4 years, like understanding a little bit now and getting our feet under ourselves a little bit. So
farming is hard.
Oh, incredibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I have such respect for farmers. It's wonderful, but I can't even imagine how deeply challenging, because I know I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, like, just this week, I think I wanted to quit at one point, and I think it's one of the jobs where you can do everything right, and you can still fail doing it, and there's just things beyond your control sometimes. It's taught me a lot about that, like, forgiving yourself or having patience, accepting things that are beyond your control.
I want to talk about some of those things, so why don't we take a little musical break and be right back.
Chasing out the vengeance. Ever since you got me pumped, she does this. Bam, my myself to talk. I used to be disgusted when I try to be amused. Since the wings have got rusted, you know the angels wanna wear my red shoes. But when they told me about the side of the bargain, that's when I knew that I could not refuse. And I won't get any older now. The angels wanna wear my red shoes. Oh, I won't get any older now. The angels wanna wear my red.
No particular connection to the discussion tonight. It is all Elvis Costello from his first album, because that's what I wanted to hear. Been listening to it all weekend, and been listening to the first four albums, and they just sound so good. So I want to talk about crops and what to expect and your approach to deciding what you're growing. But before we do that, let's talk about, you know, so you do everything right and it still goes wrong. And what are some of those variables? I assume nature decides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've learned that most of the times it's about doing it enough times and failing that you can predict problems before they become problems.
Mm-hmm.
So you, for example, I got so frustrated this week because we had an entire row of Hikuri turnips, the white turnips,
mm-hmm.
that are like sweet and crunchy.
Yeah, they're delicious.
Last week, harvested a whole row, every one of them pure white and perfect. This week, reached down, picked up a handful, every one of them had maggots in them. And it was the cabbage root maggot fly, shows up about this time, lays eggs at the base of the different brassica plants, broccolis, kales,
mm-hmm.
Turnips in particular. And yeah, it's now we know, like, okay, this is the time of year we have to have insect netting over those to exclude the flies from them.
Uh-huh.
'Cause your options are your conventional. You spray pesticides for those flies all
mm-hmm.
the time, or you exclude them.
You
out.
Net, and you can't. They're big enough that you can't exclude them. They can't get through the netting. Cool.
Yeah, if we buy the fine enough netting,
uh-huh.
that it'll keep them out. So it's like we've done turnip production through the fall, winter, now the spring, but now that we're entering into summer, is a problem I didn't know about until uh-huh. it happens. And so
that must have been an awful shock to pull them up and see that.
Oh yeah, I mean it's just, and I realize the counterpoint every week is the same day we had our best cauliflower harvest that we've ever had.
Oh, okay.
That mm-hmm. it seems like you take the good with the bad.
Sure.
That you have that bad thing happen.
Uh-huh.
You forgive yourself for it. You learn your lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know ahead of time, a month before it even becomes a problem,
to
start
do.
Netting,
uh-huh.
and then anticipate it the following year.
Uh-huh. How do you decide what you're going to grow?
We try to kind of be ruthless in our evaluation of our crops, like mm-hmm. what's selling, what's not. Analyze. We have to keep a lot of records because we're certified organic,
mm-hmm, right?
So we have to keep yield records, and that gives us an idea.
Oh, really? You also for certification?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yield records on how much you're getting off each crop.
Mm-hmm.
It's for them to be able to keep track of things. For example, like conventional strawberry production is usually you yield a lot more per acre
mm-hmm.
of strawberries versus organic because mm-hmm. of the fertilizers that you're allowed to use and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd be able to look at those numbers and say, well, you're an organic production, but you're getting conventional yields. How
mm-hmm.
are you? How are you achieving that? To look for inconsistencies in what uh-huh. people are doing. But anyway, we keep track of our yields, and we also try to keep track of like the amount that we make per hour. So you can mm-hmm. like calculate: is this a worthwhile crop?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we made a lot of money off of this row, but how many hours did it take us?
Right.
If it took us 30 hours to make that money, and you realize you're only paying yourself $10 an hour, it's not a very effective thing
sure.
versus a crop that you could potentially be paying yourself $50 an hour for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has to help you get through, like, sure. the hours that you're paying yourself $0 an hour. Like
right.
you're weeding or you're mowing the grass or you're just maintaining like equipment or something mm-hmm. like that. But trying to be ruthless with it and adapting every season.
Mm-hmm. What are some? What are I see? I know what I see when I come to your booth. But I want you to tell us, other than that, you have beautiful head lettuce right now. It's a butter type.
Mm-hmm.
So what else? What are your other crops right now?
We still have turnips and radishes. We're going to try to keep those going.
And what type of radishes are you doing?
Right now we're doing Easter eggs. Through mm-hmm. the springtime, we are doing Davignons, which is similar to French breakfast,
okay.
the elongated ones.
I love those.
It's everyone's favorite,
yeah.
and they go pithy. And like
yeah, they do.
We test them constantly, uh-huh. so then through the summertime, it gets a little bit too hot,
and right.
they can turn pithy in like half a day.
Oh, so, that quickly? Interesting.
Yeah. So we try to avoid them during the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
Strawberries are coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like, yeah, you brought a couple yeah. strawberries.
Yeah.
Let's have a strawberry.
We grow the Mar de Bois, which is a French variety.
Uh-huh. Mm. Very good.
They're unique.
Nicely sweet.
Yeah. It's fun watching people eat them at the farmer's market because they're usually very different than other strawberries that mm-hmm. they've had before. And, yeah, so strawberries are coming in well. We're doing the Mar de Bois. We're trying a couple other varieties this year from
what ones?
Trying to think of the name. Sonata's one of them. Can't remember. Just we're trying Dutch varieties as well,
uh-huh.
and we also have Seascapes, which are California
right,
bred,
that's, yeah.
UC Davis, and yeah. But tomatoes are
yeah. And what is the variety that you've just harvested? Oh, the ones you have here?
I can't tell you.
Really?
I really don't want to.
Okay.
Yeah, we were kind of doing a lot of experimenting this year to find out how we could get the earliest tomatoes, and it turned out they worked out pretty well.
Uh-huh. That's so fun. There's that little bit of competition among farmers.
Yeah, yeah. We tried two. My wife and I had a bet, and she won. So I was betting on this other type. She was betting on the one that's now producing.
Uh-huh.
And I would not have guessed that this is the one that would have showed up first.
That reminds me of when Nancy Skahl, if you knew Nancy.
I did not. I knew.
But you know of her.
I know of her at the Sebastopol Market.
Yeah, Middleton Farm. Dear Nancy Skahl, who had addictive strawberry. I mean, everything she grew was just so pristine. And in late summer and early fall, she would have the Moon and Stars melon. If you know that watermelon. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a yellow watermelon. And one of these days, I'm going to have a chance to research its history because it's dark green without stripes, but then it's speckled all over with little yellow dots,
okay.
uneven little yellow dots that look like stars. And then there's always one big, round, you know, about the size of the tomatoes. So, you know, 2 inches across,
mm-hmm.
big yellow, and it looks like
the moon.
Okay. Without, surrounded by stars. And Hector from Hector's Honey,
mm-hmm.
he always had the booth next to her. And he would try to buy a melon from her. And she wouldn't sell him a melon because he knew that she was going to, that he was going to then grow them and compete with her.
Yeah.
And this one day I bought one and he called after me saying, Michelle, wait, can I have the seeds? And Nancy's there shaking her fist at him. And it's like, no, Hector, you cannot have the seeds.
Yeah, so. It is kind of tricky. Like, you have the camaraderie and you have the cooperation of being fellow farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you are competitors in a marketplace.
Sure.
And that when you... Especially when, for example, I mean, it's taken us 4 years to figure out some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
4 years how to grow carrots properly. 4 years, what varieties of lettuce do we put in our salad mix? And so when, you know, a fellow farmer or even a customer comes and says, well, what you know, six varieties of lettuce are you putting into your salad mix? It's like, maybe more general, like an oak leaf, a butterhead, a couple mm-hmm. like frise types, like, but to give people that information is, you know, it's just kind of, you have that part in the back of your head. You're like, Ian, you worked for 4 years, you spent
sure.
hundreds or maybe even thousands of dollars to mm-hmm. like, to crack this nut and figure out this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And now do you just share that openly with everyone so that they can compete against
sure.
you?
It makes sense.
Yeah, it's tricky. You know, you want to be, especially if someone else is willing to give information, you mm-hmm. want to reciprocate, but yeah, you also want to keep some of your hard work for yourself.
Sure. That said, what kind of carrots do you grow?
I will tell you that one. Well, we grow Nelson's. Those are like the nice, they're orange.
And they're similar. Some people tell me they're similar to the Nant.
Yeah. I've heard them just called like a Nant's type.
Okay.
Like that kind
of. And Nant, of course, from the south of France.
Mm-hmm.
Just a fabulous, delicious carrot.
Yeah. We've tried others to compete against Nelson, and that's always our favorite. So we grow Nelson carrots, white satin, white carrots that are still very sweet.
When will you have those?
I had them today.
They were gone before I got there.
I had just kind of rainbow bunches with those. And
they're pale yellow, right?
Most of them are pure white.
Oh, really?
Once in a while, you get a variant that's a little bit yellow.
Okay, then I have not seen them. I've had several people have, at certain times of year, have the yellow carrots. Mm-hmm. And I've found them, for the most part, the sweetest carrots I've ever had. I just love them. But I will come early next week so that I can see them and buy some. You also do some bags of, it looks like, microgreens.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Tell us about that.
We just started doing that this year. We do pea shoots, sunflower shoots, a spicy mix that has like radish mizuna and things in it.
Radish sprouts.
Yeah, radish sprouts.
They're
good. Yeah, they're just spicy and crunchy.
Yes.
And so we do those pre-bagged and pre-weighed and labeled and everything. And the peas, that was another example. We had a crop failure, so I didn't have them this week.
Uh-huh.
I think it got a little bit too warm. They got mold on them, and then they all sprout. They all look awesome. And you come back the next day.
And it's moldy.
And everything's dead. And, okay. There goes $100. And you just have to accept it and say, I'll get the next one the next week and figure out how to sprout them correctly.
Yeah. Have you ever grown mustard sprouts?
I have not.
From actual mustard, from mustard seed, the kind of mustard seed that you would use to make the condiment? Because I've grown mustard sprouts successfully, just a jar's worth. I'm not a farmer. And I've also had that experience of, tomorrow, and then they're dead.
Yep.
They're really good. They're a great addition to spicy mix of my microgreens.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll bring you a pound of sometime, because I love them, and I want someone who's better at it than I am to do it, and I can buy them.
Cool.
On that note, how about another song? We'll be right back.
Upstairs at the bar frame where I'm left here to listen. I hear you calling his name. I hear the stutter of ignition. I could hear you whispering as I crept by your door. So you found some other joker who could please you. Why I'm not angry. Got you smiling with your lips. Spent all my time in the Vanity Factory, wondering when they're gonna come and take it all back. I'm not angry. Thing, an original sin, yeah.
I just love, this is the very first album, My Aim Is True, when Elvis Costello is backed by the Bay Area band, Marin County band, Clover. And if you listen, and I'm just going to, you know, if you're listening to Mouthful, you probably have. He's just such a great songwriter, just with the most clever turns of phrase that doesn't matter if I've heard the song 500 times, as I'm hearing it and I hear one of those fabulous turns of phrase, I just smile for the next 30 seconds. Music can do that for you, as can food and farming. Okay, so let's see. We've got, you're doing some braising at greens and stuff too, aren't you? I'm trying to think.
No.
Am I wrong? Okay, I was thinking I saw some.
Katie at Red H?
No, I was thinking of you. I was thinking that I saw some.
I have
in the boxes.
Salad mixes and spinach that are bagged as well.
Mm-hmm.
Some people see the salad mix and think it's a braising one.
No, maybe I was thinking of spinach. I just thought I saw some kales or chards in one of your boxes today.
I do have, just bunches of kale.
Okay.
Lacinato, dino kale.
Okay,
yep.
Okay, yeah. that's what I was thinking of. Yeah,
yep.
And do you don't have chickens?
Nope. No, we're so busy with the farm, trying to do animals on top of it.
Sure.
It's just we just wanted to avoid that and try to be able to get away once in a while without having.
You have to get a chicken sitter.
Yeah, chicken sitter.
Yeah. So, are you able? No, you attend just the one farmer's market.
No, we're
or you do others?
The Veterans Hall, the Vets Building Farmers Market on Saturdays.
Oh, okay.
We started that back in February.
Okay.
We got back from a vacation, and this was our first winter of growing in a hoop house that we had that we built the previous season.
Mm-hmm.
And, we got back from our trip, and there's the lettuces and pak choys and other things in there just taken off. And we're like, wow, we need a winter market. And so Jim at the Vets Building just... It was great and let us in real quick.
And how's that market going? Is that a good market for you?
Yeah, it's very good for us. I feel very appreciated there. And there's a lot of Central Valley farms that come up from Fresno and Tulane and other places. And so people can get some things that are out of season here. And then they can also come to me.
They can find you
other
for someone.
Folks and find the more local products as well. So having that diversity, it was kind of intimidating at first to pull up and see all that stuff there. The diversity is good, and people will seek me out too.
Absolutely. I think people who shop at farmers markets, for the most part, at least in my experience and the people that I talk to, that's what they're looking for. The closer to home, the better.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the Central Valley, that's sort of like, well, I couldn't find it locally here. So
yeah, but then at least they don't have to go home like empty handed.
Right. Or go to a supermarket and get it from Chile.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They can get the more options there, and it has worked out very well.
So those two are your markets?
Yeah. Well, Saturdays at the Vets and Sundays at Sebastopol, and then we work with Sarah at Fork Roadhouse midweek.
Oh, Fork Roadhouse, of course, about 3 miles past my house on Highway 12. I think so. Well, that's great. That's great that she's getting stuff from you, too.
Mm-hmm.
Is this full-time? Do you have to have a job to support your farming?
No. My wife, Emily, and I, we're both working full-time on the farm.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah, managing to make a living off of it at this point.
And how many acres?
We rent 2 acres. We have about 1.5 in full production. Because there's always like the lost space where there's trees and shadows through the wintertime and that sort of stuff and driveways. And so it's very busy for the two of us, but we manage with trying to do the crops in the right successions and the right varieties so that we can handle all of it ourselves.
And then I assume you also live there. You live on the property. Do you live on the property?
We do, thankfully. We lease the land, and then we also, there's a mother-in-law unit that we rent out there. And so it's nice to have a 100-foot commute and be able, every day. Like, we have to still... We take Mondays off, so I'll have the day off tomorrow, but I'll probably still go trap a gopher, or we'll still go water the greenhouse, or we'll still just, open the vents on the hoop house or that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. How do you trap gophers?
Cinch traps. You can get them at, like, Harmony Farm.
The ones that, with the pierce?
They have, the two pieces out front that snap together.
Snap together, yeah.
Yeah, so you do kill the gophers, but, I used to keep a tally. And then I think I got up in the 300s, and I just stopped keeping track. There's an endless endless flow of pocket gophers through this county.
Oh, definitely. I live in Club Med for gophers. Sometimes the activity, I'll walk outside and the activity from the day before, mm-hmm. I mean, from no activity the day before to suddenly there's like 300 gopher mounds that are brand new.
Yep.
And it's sort of intimidating.
Yeah, they can move quickly.
Yes.
For sure. There's also a few neighborhood cats that kind of live in the area, and they're pretty good hunters, so mm-hmm. that does help, I think.
Yeah. My cats are pretty good hunters, though. Two of them are almost 17.
Oh.
And the younger one, who's 12, she's a recent rescue. She doesn't seem to hunt at all. Mm-hmm. And the other two, if they're hunting, they're not bringing them in the house this year. And that's time. I've had gophers climbing my bookshelf. In fact, I have to give a shout out for my pup, Joey, over here. I adopted Joey when he was 9 years old. He's a miniature long-haired dachshund. And that first year, one of my cats, Poe, brought in a gopher. And it's like, oh, God, I don't want to deal with it. And I just said, Joey, go get it. And I went in the other room. And he came back in 10 seconds. And it's like, oh, great, he's not going to help me out. He had already dispatched that gopher bloodlessly. I mean, I think he just snapped its neck. He was done, came back in.
Proud of himself.
Yeah, but laid down, went to sleep. So I think I don't think they've ever, now I have the two dachshunds, I don't think they've ever actually caught one. Outside, the cats do that, but they've killed a few. Do they get much of your crop?
It depends on the crop.
Uh-huh. What do they like? I've always thought they liked carrots.
Yep, they do like carrots. They also the subterranean things. That
they also like dahlias.
Dahlias.
I had 10 or 12 beautiful. This my first encounter with gophers. I had about a dozen dahlias that I was living in Cotati, and they were so beautiful and green, and they were just ready to open. And I went out the next morning. They weren't there.
I know. It's terrible.
They weren't wilted. Gophers had pulled every single one of them all the way underground.
Yeah. We've given up on doing potatoes.
Oh, because of the gophers?
Yeah. There were times when you'd go to harvest and you just stick your, you'd punch through a hole and your whole arm would go down into a tunnel system and every potato would be gone.
Oh.
And so we've given up on doing those. We do have some specialty varieties and very large raised beds mm-hmm. that are wired on the bottom.
Yes, I have those.
So that helps, obviously. Yeah.
And you use, what is it, you use aviary wire?
Just like the hardware cloth, it's called.
Okay.
Yeah, half-inch squares.
Because I had some with chicken wire for a while, mm-hmm. and it doesn't matter because the gophers can get through the holes in chicken wire.
Yep,
so I had somebody... about a roll of aviary wire, and they redid the beds for me, and I can grow a few potatoes now.
Yep.
I'm not a good gardener, though. So what's coming up as crops ripen? I know you'll have lots of tomatoes coming on. Are you doing melons?
No, we don't. No. That was one of the things we're talking about, like being ruthless with our record keeping.
Right.
Found that they weren't making the money we needed to and cut
probably
them out
not
of the rotation.
Warm enough where you are.
I think that. I think... our size, especially melons, need quite a bit more space.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to do them effectively, just got to be able to spread them out. And plus, harvesting crops that could be, $4 or $5 or even $10 a pound is a lot, for us, a lot more efficient than mm-hmm. harvesting crops that are, like a melon, can sometimes be 50 cents a pound. And that
really?
That's a lot.
I mean, I'm used to like $3 or $4 a pound for melons.
Oh, really? Oh, well, it's like... I see a lot of people, they'll have like a cap where it's like no more than $8 for a melon or something like that, but you can still get a huge watermelon out of that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, lugging those things around.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
It is.
What about chili? Are you doing any chilies, any peppers?
Yeah, we're trying to do some new varieties this year. So we had some kind of crop failures last year with Jimmy Nardello.
And, I love those.
So we're trying some new ones and some poblanos and some sweet ones.
Poblanos are my favorite. I love poblanos. Yeah. Poblanos and then padrones, shishitos, Jimmy Nardello's, my next one after that. Are you doing any hot ones, any serranos?
We're doing jalapenos.
Jalapenos,
If only mostly for us. That's just we use a lot of them. And... but we are planting enough that we should be able to sell quite a bit at the markets and to restaurants.
Oh, cool. What was I going to say? I was going to say something else. Handlebar. Where did the name come from?
Where
tell me the story behind the name. And the little statue, not statue, the little board you have out in front, which has a handlebar mustache and a hole where somebody can, I imagine a little kid putting its face in there and it gets its photograph taken.
Yeah. The time when Emily talked about when she was younger and her grandma would have the garden in the back and she would ride around and on the handle, her grandma, Joan, mm-hmm. would put her on the handlebars of the bike.
Oh.
And ride her around in the backyard and through the garden and everything. Mm-hmm. And so we had that name. We were getting that idea. And then we're looking also just by, you were typing in handlebar into Google and mm-hmm. saw the Handlebar Mustache Association. Mm-hmm. And their slogan was to fight the bland, boring, and generic. And we thought, that's kind of what we're trying to do.
Uh-huh.
Like, fight the bland, boring, and generic vegetables. Get mm-hmm. the carrots that taste like no carrot people have tasted at a store. Mm-hmm. Get the tomatoes that taste like homegrown tomatoes instead of the store ones that taste like nothing.
Right.
And so we felt like it fit.
Uh-huh. It's a great name, and I didn't think of the bicycle. I only thought of the mustache.
It was kind of a
combination. But the bicycle I like even more.
And I tried, and I grew out a handlebar mustache, and
I think you had one when I met you.
Okay. Yeah. Those guys in the 1800s must have had a lot of time on their hands for, like, self, you know, maintenance. The waxing and the...
Yeah, they don't look easy to take care of.
No, it was just a pain. And mm-hmm. you always get it in your mouth when you eat, and... It's ridiculous. So after, I think, a few months, I chopped it off.
Okay. We're going to hear one more song by Elvis Costello and come back and wrap it up here on another yummy episode of Mouthful.
Waiting through the end of the world. Waiting through the end.
waiting for the end of the world. Elvis Costello was pretty prescient with that one. I think that album came out in 1976, and that long ago he wrote a song about the current election cycle. Who would have thought? Okay, we've got just a few minutes left. Who does your website? You have a nice little website.
Oh, I made that one.
You did?
Yeah, and now we mostly just post on Facebook now.
Uh-huh.
So if you go to the website, I do need to update some information mm-hmm. just to direct people to the right places.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, you explain who you are, what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You have a blog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So do you, excuse me. Scratchy throat. You don't do a CSA program, do you?
No, we don't. Uh-huh. We tried a little bit in our second year, and we tried really hard, but just didn't work out.
Yeah.
So, but we appreciate the flexibility that the markets offer us.
Sure.
So that if you do have the crop failures or things like that happen, that the markets can, you're just like, oh, I don't have so-and-so.
Right.
I don't have, carrots this week.
Mm-hmm. The reason I ask is one of the questions I've noticed I've been getting a lot lately from readers and a few people on Facebook as well is where do I, my schedule doesn't allow me to go to farmers markets.
Mm-hmm.
So where can I buy the kind of food you recommend?
Yeah.
And so one of the things I recommend is certain farm stands like Green String Farm Stand in Petaluma, for example, Tierra Vegetables in Santa Rosa.
Yep.
But also I would say, if you can handle, if you can take the unpredictability of not knowing what you're getting, try a CSA.
Yeah.
So I just like to let people know all their options. So if they really want your stuff, they got to go to one of the two.
Yep.
And guess what?
Yeah, the two farmers markets on the weekend or the restaurant.
Saturday at Veterans Building, Sunday in Sebastopol. And on that note, the show is over for another week. Meet me back here next Sunday at 6 for another episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming. Have a great week.